भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from 11th canto, 18th chapter, text 35. Yadrichchaya upapana anam adhyat shrishtam uta aparam tatha vashaha tatha shayam praptam praptam bhajat munihi yadrit chayo papananam chayo papananam adyat trisham utaparam tatasvashastatat shayam Praptam Prapram Bhajet Muni Bhajet Muni Bhajet Yadrit Chayo Papananam Chayo Papananam Adyat Trisham Utapuram Tata Vashas Tata Shayam Praptam Praptam Bhajet Muni Yadrit Chayo Papananam Yadat Trishnam Utapuram Trishnam Tata Vashas Tata Shayam Praptam Praptam Bhajan Muni Jitayo papananam Adyat shishtam utaparam Tatavastas tatashayam Praptam praptam bhajen muni Jitayo papananam Adyat shishtam utaparam Tathabhashastatashayam Praptam Praptam Bhajadmuni Word meaning? Yadrichchaya of its own accord. Upapana acquired. Anam food. Adyat he should eat. Shishtam First class, uta, or, aparam, low class, tata, similarly, vasaha, clothing, tata, similarly, shayam, bedding, praptam, praptam, whatever is automatically obtained, bhajat, should accept. Munihi, the sage. Translation, a sage should accept the food, clothing, and bedding, be they of excellent or inferior quality, that come of their own accord. Purport, sometimes excellent, sumptuous food will come without endeavor, and at other times tasteless food appears. A sage should not become happily excited when a sumptuous plate is brought to him, nor should he angrily refuse ordinary food that comes of its own accord. If no food comes at all, as mentioned in the previous verse, one must endeavor to avoid starvation. From these verses, it appears that even a saintly sage must have a good dose of common sense. Mukam karoti vachanam bhagunangai tegirin kripata maham vande sri guru dinatharinam maham vishnu padaya krishna prishtai bhutale simati bhakti vedanti shami iti namane namaste sharaswati deve gauravani pacharine nirvisesa simivari pascha So The two previous verses are summed up in this verse, because the verse 33 said, if you don't get food, chant the mantra, whatever, and just go on with your business. Then the next verse said, but if you don't get food, how can you do service? So it's not bad to make a little effort because it's for service. So today's verse is kind of summing up both verses, right? So what I did this morning, rather than belabor those points which we discussed in depth, first half of the equation is be beyond duality. The second half of the equation is be practical. And so Maharaj in his commentary used the word common sense. So I thought I would research what Prabhupada said about common sense. It's kind of interesting. I didn't find the quote where I was always aware of this quote. I wasn't actually looking for it per se. Where we heard Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is 90% common sense. I think that's in a letter, as far as I remember. There were a lot of questions being asked. And they're just common sense questions. So, and then in one letter, I think Prabhupada said, you know, there's this whole list of questions, so he answered a few and said, regards to your other questions, use your common sense, and if you don't have any, ask someone who does. You know that letter? It's about Tulsi or something? Tulsi, yeah. It's like, so, okay, we'll go through this. There's one contradiction in all these statements. Every statement that I got, I stopped, you know, at 7:15 I stopped. But every statement, Prabhupada, is using common sense in the way we use it. And there's one statement, he says, you can't understand Krishna with common sense. So you have. Anyway, Krishna, don't you try to use your common sense, you're not going to understand transcendence. But in every other sense, he was using it, you know, use your common sense as a way to understand. So you obviously have both. How are you going to understand if it's transcendental? But generally, philosophically, it's all common sense. When you get to Leela, all right, then maybe different. Anyway, I thought I would look up the definition. The interesting thing about the definition is they don't play off this common sense, because common sense means everybody would know. They play off the definition, sound and prudent judgment based on a simple perception of the situation. So I didn't look up the etymology. We would think the etymology means, yeah, everybody knows this. But most of the definitions were about intelligence, prudence, like that. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. So, anyway, we have our own understanding of common sense, which is translated in the colloquial phrase, duh. So you could replace duh for common sense, right? You said, like, you know, God, you're a person, so how could God not be a person? Duh. You know, so that's the common word now for common sense, isn't it? More or less, like, you should know that. It's just, that doesn't take a brain. But it's used, at least traditionally, more as intelligence. Although common sense doesn't sound like it. But anyway, sound and prudent judgment based on a simple perception of the situation or facts. Like, you should understand this if you have a brain. So first we'll read the quote where Prabhupada says, common sense cannot understand transcendence. And then the rest of the quotes, that's all about how you understand, at least philosophically you understand position of God, matter and spirit, you know. Tattva, common sense. Rasa, not necessarily. So this is from the second canto, first chapter, text 30. To common sense, the description in this verse appears to be somewhat contradictory, because sometimes the sun has been described as the eyeball and sometimes as the outer space sphere. But there is no room for common sense in the injunctions of Shastra. We must accept the description of the Shastra and concentrate more on, we must accept the description of the Shastras and concentrate more on the form of the Virata Rupa than on common sense. Common sense is always imperfect. whereas the description of Shastra is always perfect and complete. So this isn't even rasa. I mean, you could call it a rasa in a sense. If there is any incongruity, it is due to our imperfection and not Shastra's. That is the method of approaching Vedic wisdom. So we will see in another conversation, a person is making a statement based on Shastra, and Prabhupada said, don't bring in Shastra. We're just talking common sense. So when Prabhupada wanted to talk common sense, you don't need Shastra. You know, let's just bring this down to like, this is not sectarian, it's not our religion. But here, this is more for us than the average person. Look at this is Shastra. And then on a morning walk, you know, Prabhupada's morning walks, scientists, what do the scientists say, this and that. And so they were going back and forth, and then Prabhupada said, okay, let me like summarize this whole discussion. Either you believe in the scientists or you believe in Shastra. That's all. So that's, you know, the discussion was going on. They say this, we say this. And he said, well, who you want to believe? So, you know, in that sense, some things won't make common sense. So that's the point Prabhupada's making. But the rest of the things we're going to quote are interesting because it's not really dealing on that level of common sense. Lord Buddha, this is from Bhagavatam 2.7.37. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when the people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles. Now he explains what they are. Such ahimsa is not a religious principle itself, but it is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is a common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being because such harmful actions are equally harmful to who does the harm. Of course, you might say, well, all right, that's common sense. Doesn't seem like most people have that common sense, which is true. They don't. You know, sometimes when people say, why do you eat meat? Prabhupada said, would you like to get your throat cut? And he said, the animal doesn't like it either. So it's like, duh, it's just, you know, but people don't understand. And that's what I tell people when they ask me why you're vegetarian. And they actually, every time I say that, they just like, they don't know what to say.
You say, would you like to
cut
your throat?
Yeah. I said, you know, I said, what if I came up to you and said, I'm hungry, can I cut your throat? You'd probably say no, right? And you say, so you think the animal like that? Sometimes they try, well, animals are for food. No, no, no. Do you think that animal is up with like, you know? Anyway, it's common sense, but we see people will even argue that or just... Sometimes they can't argue it and they're really frustrated because they want to argue it. And what can you say? But some people are actually foolish enough to argue that. Now, so Prabhupada goes on. But before learning these principles of nonviolence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and prideless. So now he's taking the logic. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and nonviolent. So you shouldn't eat animals because you will suffer. So you have to be harmless and nonviolent. But you have to be humble and prideless to be harmless and nonviolent. After being nonviolent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respects to great religious preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action, learning to be unattached to family and home and enacting devotional service to the Lord. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become his devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instruction are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. So, upadharma is common sense. Should be. Okay, the next one. Adi Lila. Unfortunately, people in general do not know what is to take place in the next life. To prepare oneself for the next life is common sense. They're starting to see a pattern of lack of common sense here, isn't it? you know how in goal setting you think where do I want to be in a year, 2, 5, 10, like that. So my line is, okay, where do you want to be in 10, 20? Where do you want to be in 100? You know, just to throw that out there. What's your plan for, you know, 100 years from now? Yeah, good answer. We want you to think, you know. To prepare oneself for his next life is common sense. And it is, you know, or they say, well, how do you know there's a next life, or how do you know? Well, you should know, right? Like, he's just going to die saying, well, how do you know? Nobody knows. Well, you should know. What if there is and you don't know? But presently, people throughout the world do not believe in a next life. Even influential professors and other educators say that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This atheistic philosophy is killing human civilization. People are irresponsibly performing all sorts of sinful activities, and thus the privilege of the human life is taken away by the educational propaganda of so-called leaders. Wow, that's a heavy statement. The privilege of the human life is being taken away by educational propaganda of the so-called leaders. Actually, it is a fact that this life is meant for preparation for the next life. By evolution, one has come through many species and forms, and this human form of life is an opportunity to promote oneself to a better life. Yanti deva vrata devan. All right, so this is 9:43. You know, like when our kids are like 3 years old, they're old enough to understand they're not the body, and there's transmigration. 3 or 4, you know, at least by 5, they can articulate it quite well. And big professors say there's no next life. So our 5-year-old kids are smarter than the big professors. At least they have more common sense. Or we've given them more common sense. This is Adi 17:157. Our Vedic scriptures are not ordinary law books of human common sense. They are statements of factually liberated persons unaffected by the imperfectedness of the senses. Now Prabhupada puts down common sense. Goes to the Shastra, puts down common sense. Throw the Shastra away, preach common sense. That seems to be the pattern, isn't it? Krishnadas Kaviraj, he was talking about faith, and he said there's 3 ways you get faith. One is through scripture, one is through association, one is through experience. And of the three, experience is the best, because you can't argue with your own experience. So it seems often that Prabhupada was appealing to people's common sense because, in theory, they would have experience of common sense. And so you don't argue common sense. Of course, Kali Yuga is degrading. People may argue it. But I think the principle is, if it's common sense, everyone accepts it, everyone has that experience, then you can establish your tattva, your siddhanta, because no one will argue it, because it's within everyone's experience. So Prabhupada likes us to preach common sense, right? But then we get into Shastra, and it's like sometimes you have to throw out common sense because it's transcendental. Some things. What is that verse? Logic, by logic you can't understand. This is from Madhya 4:133. But these things cannot be understood by non-devotees. One must understand Krishna in tattva, truth. One should use his common sense and consider. Here's Prabhupada's point, common sense. Consider that if simply by chance, you're talking about Krishna being immoral. Krishna dances with other men's wives. Actually, what they don't know is Krishna is dancing with himself, because those other men's wives are expansions of his own energy. So he's actually dancing with himself. And you know, we say Krishna's self-satisfied, so if he's self-satisfied, why does he have to dance with other men's wives? He would just sit home and meditate. But that is his self. He is self-satisfied because that's expansion of his own energy. So dancing with those, he's dancing with himself, basically. So that is his Atvarama, to go out and dance and do something rather than sit and meditate and do nothing. So that's, this discussion is in this context. One must understand Krishna in truth. One should use his common sense and consider that if simply by chanting Krishna's holy name one is purified, then how can Krishna be immoral? That's Prabhupada's logic, right? Krishna's immoral, dance with other women, and I chant his name and I become celibate. Duh. Again, common sense is just duh. Right? Isn't it? Unfortunately, mundane fools are accepted as educational leaders and are offered exalted posts for teaching irreligious principles to the general populace. Kali Yuga. Prabhupada's just describing Kali Yuga. Andayatanha upaniyamana. Blind men trying to lead the other blind men. Anyway, we'll go on to the next. This is from the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev. This is the last one I have.
Came out of that chunk of matter.
In this verse, Devahuti also addresses her son as Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the Supreme Person. If we could use just a little common sense, if we could use, my dear sir, if you could use a little common sense, please. If we could use a little common sense, we could understand that an organization requires a leader. Without a leader, we cannot organize anything. Foolish philosophers say that the universe automatically comes into being by nature. They say that in the beginning there was a chunk, and this cosmic manifestation came out of that chunk of matter. But where did this chunk come from? The fact is, there must be a brain, a leader, behind anything organized. So then Prabhupada is appealing to common sense, which it's so interesting, because it's not that people who support atheism were all born that way. Some of them cultivated it through their educational system. Through acquiring knowledge, they became convinced there's no God. So Prabhupada's, you know, basically saying education is making people atheistic. That's a great contribution of education to the modern world. Yeah, social engineering. Tamal Krishnamar said, when he was going to SMU, he said, you know, I was taking these religious classes and all these kids are Christians. And by the end of 4 years, they completely learned to doubt their own religion. You know, they became agnostic. That was the, because that's the academic system, doubt it. Doubt it, and, you know, it's fun if you like to speculate because you don't have to come to any conclusion. You can just go on speculating and get paid for it. And then there's no commitment because there's no conclusion. So it's a great job if you like, you know, just theorizing. Could be this, could be that. So Prabhupada here is appealing to common sense. Where did this chunk come from? The fact is, there must be a brain, a leader behind anything organized. We have information of this leader from the Vedas. Nitya nityanam chetanas chetananam. The Supreme Lord is eternal, and we are also eternal, but the Supreme Lord is one and we are many. The Supreme Lord is very great and we are very small. Once in the early days they said, Prabhupada, what is Krishna consciousness? You know, so Prabhupada was preaching against all this Mayavad philosophy because all those people who were coming, that's all they knew about India's Mayavad philosophy. Said, God is great, you are not great, therefore, you are not God. That was Prabhupada's summation of Krishna consciousness in that context. God is great, you're not great, therefore you are not God. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You might be great, but not that great. I mean, you're like Prabhupada said, you know what's in the next room? you're not that great, you don't know what's in the next room. When you get to mystic power, you can be a little greater. Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, unless someone understands that the reason they're here is to compete with God, then they can't discriminate religion from irreligion and worship, this kind of worship on that. They don't understand that they're still trying to compete with God through their religious process. They don't mind competing with him as long as, you know, he helps them compete with him. God, could you help me compete with you? This is what I need to compete with you. Hello, anybody home? It shows that verse of Bhagavad Gita, you know, that if you're attached to material opulence and sense gratification, you know, your brain gets shut off. At least a part of it just turns off. That religious part just stops working, basically, right? But then you come up with all these philosophies to propose that you're religious, right? Because it'd be embarrassing to say you're not, when actually you're just like, you don't get it. The Supreme Lord is very great and we are very small. He is all-pervading and infinite and we are finite and infinitesimal. You know, one time Prabhupada was asked, is God the greatest? Is that what God is? Prabhupada said, no. He said, if he's just the greatest, that's not so special. But if he's the greatest and the smallest at the same time, that's special. So, he's the biggest, Mahato, Mahiyan, Aniyor, Aniyan, Mahat. He's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. That's greatness. You know, okay, you're the greatest guy in your company. Can you simultaneously be the lowest? That would be your greatness. You could be small and big at the same time. So that's his greatness. He can be bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. Can you do that? Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, I fly a lot, so sometimes I get there and there's a big line, so I decide to be the last one. So can't be the first, I'll be the last and get some recognition. Can't be the top devotee, I could be the worst. Get some recognition, yeah. I could be the most humble, right, yeah. That was a devotee saying, I'm the most fallen. You know, the Prabhupada understood, you know. That was just an excuse. If a conditioned devotee says, I'm the most fallen, you should immediately know that's an excuse to get out of service. Or again, it's an excuse that if I don't become Krishna conscious in this lifetime, I just want you to know the reason is I'm the most fallen. You can't expect the most fallen to, you know, to be very Krishna conscious. So we talk, you know, in the name of humility, we just talk ourselves out of going back to Godhead. Isn't it? One devotee made a nice statement. I really like this. He said, you know, a lot of times devotees will say, they'll denigrate themselves, I'm the most fallen, I'm this and that. And he said, my feeling is they're saying that because they don't want anybody else to tell them that. So if they say it, I'm like protected. No one, you don't have to tell me what's wrong with me. I'll just tell you, I'm fallen, you know. So then I protect myself from being, you know, criticized or anyone giving me any instruction. Yes, you agree? Kind of a defense mechanism. Yeah. No one will shoot arrows at me because I'm already sticking them in me. Exactly. Even within your own race, you can insult your own race. Black guys do it all the time. You do that, they shoot you. For them, it's fun. Sometimes I make fun of Jewish people, but I can do that because I'm Jewish. Yeah, exactly. You're cool. Even if we analyze the creation, we will find that not everyone is on the same level. One person is more intelligent or opulent than another. If we analyze things in this way, we will come to the demigods, and among them we will find that the most important demigod is Lord Brahma. He is the original creature within this universe, yet he is not the most intelligent. It is said that in the beginning, Brahma received knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, so many times when they have these life-from-life arguments, they'd say, Prabhupada, they say this, that it comes from this, it comes from that. And Prabhupada always say, where does that come from? It's like, you know, so we're listening to Prabhupada and thinking, oh, Prabhupada's so intelligent. But if you analyze it, it's just like common sense. He's just talking common sense. And we realize we didn't have common sense. There's a Big Bang, you know, what do they say? An infinite amount of energy in a finite space, you know, try to wrap your head around that one. But anyway, Prabhupada didn't go there. He just said, you know, so where'd the space come from? There's a joke. So the scientist goes to God and says, we figured out how to create life, so we don't need you anymore. And God says, let's have some competition, see what you can do. And the scientist says, okay, sure. Let's do it like you did, you know, because in the Bible they say, you know, God breathed life into matter. You know? So let's do it like you do. You know, we'll get some earth, you know, we'll form it into a form, a living, and we'll breathe life into it. So the guy starts to go get the dirt, and God says, wait a minute, get your own dirt. So, you know, that's Prabhupada's argument. You know, came from here, came from there, yeah, well, you know, where'd that come from? Or, you know, or who pushed that button, you know. So Prabhupada was just speaking common sense. And, you know, if people want to argue that, then what can you do? But that was Prabhupada's preaching technique. I don't have the quote here, but somehow I didn't copy it because maybe it was repetitive. But this boy, or maybe I skipped it, there's a conversation and the Prabhupada's just talking with a boy. I don't have it here. And he's, you know, the boy's saying, in the Shastra, it says, and Prabhupada just said, because Prabhupada was making his point, which had nothing to do with Shastra, it was common sense. He said, forget Shastra. This is common sense. And he just didn't want people to necessarily have to go there and think, our religion's against yours, and it's just Shastra, and we believe it just because. I mean, all that's true. But we believe, you know, we don't just believe it because it's in Shastra. This is common sense. So throw the Shastra out. Let's talk. Let's get this point. This boy was going up here. Shastra and Prabhupada said, ooh, come down here. Let's get this point. This is common sense. Understand that. Yeah, this, that. Now, okay. Do you see that Shastra makes sense? There's one conversation. This probably gives a class, and a girl raises her hand. She asks a question about Vivashwan and some, you know, like impossible thing going on with Vivashwan and chariots and flying around and this and that, or kings, you know, having these ultimate powers and hundreds, thousands, or millions of bodyguards and this and that. So she asks a question about that, and sometimes when people would ask questions that really had no, that seemed more like curiosity than had any practical reason to ask or philosophical reason, Prabhupada sometimes would say, why are you asking that question? Like, what's the point of it? So that was a question that Prabhupada said, why are you asking? And she said, well, Prabhupada, it seems impossible that it could be that way. You know, it was something, you know, you read in Shastras, you've never seen this, it doesn't make sense. The Prabhupada said, what do you know? You're just one entity on one planet in a huge universe. What do you know of this universe? You don't know anything. So it's kind of like, let's get some perspective here. You know, with all your doubting, you're like one infinitesimal being on one little planet. And you know, what can you see? You can see this room, right? You may know that in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada said there are these huge birds that travel planet to planet, which is kind of hard to believe. And they lay eggs, and the eggs actually hatch in midair, right? So, long before that was in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was in his garden, and he was speaking to some professors. So, as every good brahmacharya would do, if you could sneak around and put your ear to the fence or go up to the top floor where the gift shop is now in L.A., you could look into the garden and try to hear. So I just, you know, snuck around. As soon as I put my ear in, Prabhupada said, so there are these big birds. They fly from planet to planet. And they, you know, it was not in the Bhagavatam yet. That was the first time anyone heard it, you know. And so, you know, when we heard things like that, completely, you're like, that's crazy, you know. We didn't think like that. We just said, oh my God, that's amazing. You know, that's, we had faith, right? So how was that faith built up? It was built up through common sense, logic, to get to that point. And so, like Prabhupada saying, you know, you don't believe Krishna's God. Vyasadeva does. His IQ is a little better than yours. Plus, you know, he never drank alcohol and, you know, ate a Colonel Sanders. You know, give him a break, you know. And, you know, Rupa Goswami, you know, Jiva Goswami, they could write perfectly 100,000 verses without a dictionary or a editing program. Not even have to correct it. You know, these people actually are intelligent. And they're writing these amazing intellectual philosophical theses on the nature of Krishna. And you know, we're drinking alcohol every day in your college days, and you think you're like, I mean, of course we don't say that, but you think, you know, well, hello, like, you know, why don't you follow someone who's smarter than you? Don't you think that's a good idea? So that was kind of Prabhupada's, you know, okay, let's get you to that platform, that the person who wrote these books, he's way smarter than you are. Now you can have faith in these books, in things that you can't see. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not true. Have faith in him. He can see it. One time there's a morning walk. They're talking about the Bible. Probably Prajapati Prabhu was in the morning walk. Because that, when Sarup Damodar was in the morning walks, scientists, when Prajapati Prabhu was there, a lot of the theosophical conversations came. You know, they're talking the Bible. And Prabhupada said, the Bible is not transcendental. He said, it was just concocted by this person and that person. It was just, they weren't like channeling God, although maybe Christians think they were. And the Prabhupada saying, but our Shastra, that's different. They weren't conditioned souls. So these people were apostles and, you know, what was their qualification? You know, it's Kali Yuga. They weren't qualified. So it wasn't like they, you know, enlightened souls were descending around Jesus. No, they weren't enlightened souls. But our Shastras are written by enlightened souls who don't have these imperfections. So Prabhupada said, yeah, their book's not transcendental.
A lot of it is actually memories of what the apostles said, not even what the apostles said.
Exactly.
I mean, how is that? How is that, you know?
Written
part of scripture, if someone remembers what they think.
Then they
get it wrong. Yeah, I mean, they just think, they thought that that's what he said, you know. I thought that's what you said, and that becomes scripture, and so, you know, it's
and how
amazing.
Long?
It's just
and,
amazing.
Yeah, and how, what, 50 years later? My experience is... Yeah. My experience is, after I get class, a lot of times people come up and say, you know, it was really a nice point you made about this. And I go, I didn't make that point. That's not what I meant. So, you know. And Jesus, and these are the people who actually know the philosophy. It's not like new people. These are devotees. Oh, it was a really nice point you made when you said this. And that wasn't my point. So, yeah. You have to be careful. So, you know, at the same time, these things Shastra is saying, we still want to try to explain it logically as best we can, or even for our own understanding. You know, it's okay, this is this king and doing this and this power, and try to understand it as best we can and explain it as best we can. Or when people bring it up, just say, don't worry about it. Just understand. You're not the body. You got that? Let's go from there. You know. Don't go get drunk tonight. You got that? Let's start there. It's going to get worse as Kali Yuga progresses. The common denominator is going to go lower. Right? So, some discussion. I finished reading. Or a question or something. Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for being here and giving the class. Welcome, Vijay Prabhu.
Jai Vijay, Ki Jai.
My question has to do with, the discussion between Christianity and Krishna consciousness. I mean, we have Prabhupada saying Christ is our guru. We have Krishna, Christos Christ. We have, so many dialogues. Now we have devotees going into Christian, universities. Our Guru Maharaj went to SMU. He studied, Christianity. And my question has to do with these types of topics. When we say there's nothing transcendental about the Bible, I guess my question, the root of my question is...
There might be something transcendental, but the people who wrote it weren't transcendental.
I brought a question like this up to Satyarup Maharaj, and he told me, understand it, at least they're presenting God as a person. We should support them for that. But my question is to do with, it seems like every religion and Krishna consciousness, when you make a statement like that, we have this idea that we're somehow better than them. The scripture's better, we're better, our practice is better. But when we look at one another and we look at them, we're pretty much the same people. We might be struggling with something, they're struggling with meat eating, we're struggling with something else, So that's my question.
Yeah. Well, let's forget us for the first part of the discussion. Just look at the philosophy. I think we can understand there's limitations in the Bible, and as Durashai is saying, and a lot was left out and confusion and contradictions. And I think, how many denominations of Christianity exist today? Thousands? Tens of thousands? Thousands. So, we have rasa. They don't know anything about rasa, right? So we've left them in the dust in terms of rasa. Maybe in terms of tattva, a lot of similarities and so forth. But when it comes to rasa, they haven't got a clue. So that's just objective analysis. Now, as far as us being better because we have more knowledge, the two don't go together. Maybe academically, theoretically, textbook-wise, it should. But I kind of see it like we're enrolled in Harvard and they're enrolled in a community college. That doesn't mean that we're smarter or better students. They may be smarter, they may be better practitioners of their religion than we are of Krishna consciousness. We're just in a better university. We've got better teachers. We've got better books. Doesn't mean we're better. And, the paradox of it is if you're actually better, you won't think that. That's the ultimate, right? You're better. But Prabhupada came, as a preacher, he was on the Madhyam platform discriminating. And then when he was leaving his body, he was apologizing to his godbrothers for making those statements. So that's the duty of a Madhyam. And sometimes when Prabhupada was criticized for criticizing, what would he say? He would say, I don't say, Krishna says. I'm just repeating. Krishna calls him Amuta, it's not me. So Prabhupada was bold in that sense. So preaching requires, I think it requires understanding our position, understanding their position, and then knowing how to present it in a way that's encouraging. Because you could see the most interesting thing about Prabhupada and Christianity is he never argued their philosophy. He only honed in on meat eating. He never had philosophical discussions, to my knowledge. Your philosophy is wrong. You believe this. You don't believe in the next life. He didn't argue. They didn't go there. You could say he didn't go there because he had to get over this first thing, because why go to the next thing if you're killing animals? But it's just because we love to talk about what's wrong with their philosophy. He didn't. And I think the second point is he didn't want to discourage people who believed in God and had some form of faith in Jesus. So why discourage them? And but I think for us to think we're better than other religious people, in many cases they're more religious. They may be going faster on the wrong road. That's the problem. We may be going slower, but at least we're on the right road. They're going. So when I see another religious person that's maybe a little more austere or devoted than I am, I get inspired. Not necessarily by the road they're taking, but how fast they're going. Or how focused they are. You know? And I think, we don't think that way. We're just, you know, it's like, you know, we want to dominate. I want to defeat you. You know, we're out there on the street, 20 years old, preaching. We meet a Christian. Our only goal in preaching that Christian is to, quote unquote, smash them. We don't care if they go back to God or not, as long as we smash them. Isn't it? So, you know. So what do we do now? You know, now we're 50s, 60s. Smashing is not fun. Doesn't give us any pleasure. You know? I smashed him. Yeah, get away, be nice, smile, thank you. All glories to Jesus, you know.
Ravindra Prabhu has said that actually, you know, all the theistic religions of the world are really our allies, and we should all get together and smash the Mayavadis because they're our common enemy.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they don't have a theistic, you know, personal viewpoint of God.
Yeah.
And they're causing, you know, the spiral of degradation so much more.
That was Prabhupada's mood because when he talked to the priests, he said, let's work together. He didn't even care about those philosophical differences. He said, let's work together. He saw enough God consciousness there, right?
I was going to say that when we actually are preaching to anybody, the question becomes, who is doing the preaching here? If I think that I'm preaching, then all these issues are going to arise, you know? That am I better, or is the other person better, or and comparisons will arise.
Battle of egos.
Yes. But when we're actually representing, you know, our acharyas, we're representing the Supreme Lord in our talks with them, it's not a question of whether I am better than the other person or the other person is better than me. The question is, what is the truth here? And can we accept the truth? If we can accept the truth, then obviously we'll raise our consciousness. We'll all be the better off, right? It's not like if I'm preaching, the person I'm preaching to is the only one who is benefiting. Actually, we say that the person who's preaching benefits much more than the person who is being preached to by the preaching process. Like you said, one of the things is, if it's your personal experience, the faith is going to skyrocket much better than if it's faith coming from a higher platform when it's not your personal experience, you know? So I think that that's something that we have to resolve when we're preaching, that who's doing the talking here? Because if it's me doing the talking, my false ego doing the talking, my intelligence doing the talking, then unfortunately we're not preaching. What we're doing is we're just promoting ourselves. In that situation, these issues will arise, you know? Are we trying to represent ourselves as better than others, or are they better than us, or we're better than them? I mean, you know, the real issue is that, like Prabhupada made a statement, it was a really astounding statement. He said the worst of the devotees is 10,000 times better than the best of the karmis, right? I mean, if you think about that statement, that's a heavy, heavy statement to make. Because if you look at when we actually interact with others, if we see somebody as a rich person, we see dollar signs, right? Okay, I can get a donation from that person. Hopefully that'll go in my pocket instead of Krishna's pocket. But, you know, that's basically, it's like, this is what we're doing. We're not actually looking at the person as a devotee of Krishna. And that we, as servants of the servants, are meant to serve the devotee of Krishna so that he or she can have more love for Krishna, which will inspire me to have more love for Krishna. You know? When you come on that platform, we can see it's actually true that the worst of the devotees is 10,000 times better than the best of the karmis, because the intention is very different for the devotee. The devotee's intention is, how do I come closer to Krishna? The karmi's purpose is, how can I be happy? How can I gratify my senses? So how can there even be a comparison between the two like that?
Thank you. Why are we preaching? Well, in the old days, it was to get a maha plate, I think. Two more books, you get a maha plate. And it was fun to smash people. Made you feel, you know, like powerful, right? Smart. And I think as we get older, we come more to your platform, like, I'm just trying to help people, that's why I'm here. You know, also, there's another point which I found very useful, especially if you're teaching Bhagavad Gita. Because sometimes people want to argue. And one of the ways to bypass it is that I'm representing this book. This is what it says in this book. So my job here, it's not like you go to a professor, you know, in a class and argue with him. He's just presenting what the academic community has understood. Whether you think it's right, even if he thinks it's right, this is what he's presenting. So we're presenting Bhagavad Gita. The people who have come here have come to learn, you know, and you're coming to challenge. It's not the mood. If you want to talk after classes, we can talk. So anybody, reasonable person, can understand that. It's a teaching. We're representing it. That's what I do. I once had an aspiring disciple who said, you know, you should teach this or that, some like, you know, psychological thing. And I just said, you know, I represent parampara. I can't teach that. It's not, I mean, I could touch it, you know, if it helps, but I'm not meant to represent that parampara. So this is our parampara. This is what we represent. And other religious people can respect that. Yeah, or I ask you to respect. I respect that you're, yeah. Yes?
When I'm distributing books to Christians, I tell them, you know, we're on the same side. We're promoting God.
You tell them that.
I tell them, you know, atheism is growing so fast. So we're on the same side.
Yeah. They like that.
Oh, yeah, they love it. Yeah.
Perfect.
Take a book.
We have, Christianity has yet to mature to the point where maybe we also have to mature more to be able to work together in a way, as you said, to fight Mayavad, fight atheism. I always think like that. You know, you have all these religions. It's like the common enemy. But they're fighting one another instead of the enemy. Yeah, fighting us, fighting themselves. Yes.
There's a devotee here, Mother Glindy. She got initiated by Vaisheshika Prabhu. And she was from a long history of Christianity and teaching Christianity. Mm. And so when she started getting interested, Rupanuga Prabhu was preaching to her in his college class. And it's kind of funny because they glorified Vaisheshika Prabhu. Oh, my God, you initiated a Christian?
Glorious, huh? So rare.
But the point that I wanted to make was Mother Kalindi, she brought her pastor here. Uh-huh. And he dialogued with Rupanuga Prabhu and met the devotees and Swami, and he thought everything was really good. So, and I saw that in the, with our Guru Maharaj going to SMU, I thought, oh my God, this is a totally disinterested Christian community. They're gonna just be on his back, you know. But what he found was that all the professors, not just one, but everybody in his department was bored with Christianity. And most of them had been, you know, dabbling with Indian philosophies, uh-huh. Or some of them had lived in India, and all of them had been to our temple.
Well, I want to tell you something heavy. Maybe we can find this letter. And Prabhupada wrote a letter when I was in San Diego. And he was making predictions what was going to happen. If we continue preaching Krishna consciousness on the level we were preaching in 1972, he said, no one will even have any interest in Christianity because we're giving something better. And he said, no, he predicted this would happen in the 90s, in like 20, 25 years, this was 72, and that no one would believe in the scientists. We would expose them all. Now what's interesting, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Ramakrishna mission of which, what's his name? Vivekananda, super, super popular. So it was probably the most popular religion, at least in Bengal, at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta. And because their preaching was so strong, basically that movement was almost finished. Not that they came and blew it up with bombs, but their preaching was exposing that misunderstanding, and so people lost faith in it. And then after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur died, and gradually the preaching in the Gaudiya Math subsided to some degree or sufficiently, the movement became powerful again. Interesting, huh? So, and Prabhupada in a talk, He said he blamed the Gaudiya Mat on the success of the Ramakrishna Mission. He said it's their fault that they're successful.
So I have a question, which I hope is related. In reference to, you know, massive spreading of Krishna consciousness and so on, we seem to be philosophically heavy, kind of, you know, brain heavy, and most people aren't.
Yeah.
Most people aren't that philosophical, and we have so many bad philosophies to defeat, which are taking up space in their mind, but they don't have the ability to digest our arguments. So how's that going to work?
What?
Some of them can, but it seems to be a smaller percentage.
Yeah.
Maybe we're misjudging, but...
Well, I would say, maybe edit that statement a little. What you say is true, but I think maybe it's initially people aren't interested in philosophy, but they can... later. I mean, because you see devotees, they all get philosophical, you know. You know? So maybe it's just they're not interested initially so much, everybody. I mean, one of the realities of life is people move because of experience. That's what, you know, it's what you feel makes you move. So, you know, ask any devotee why you became a devotee, there'll be a lot of words like, I felt this and felt that, I experienced this and I experienced that. So I think that's part of it. But people come for different reasons. And to think it's only philosophical would be a mistake. Experience is happiness, solving problems, overcoming dissatisfaction. I have a disciple who's a counselor, and she said the number one problem that people tell her is that I'm dissatisfied. So if people become satisfied, people find good relationships. You know, even if you don't have a philosophy and just have good relationships, because that's what a lot of Christian churches do. It's not like they're philosophical. Their philosophy is pretty much 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 steps, you know. You're sinful, you're going to hell, Jesus came to save you, accept him. Business is over. And the rest is like fellowship, isn't it? And then how to solve practical problems. You know, it's very few pastors are philosophical. It's all about this problem, that problem, what did Jesus say about this? So they're solving problems.
Told in a different way. And this is a devotee who is distributing books, goes to his spiritual master and says, you know, I've been trying to distribute these books, but what's happening is people are saying, we already know God, you know, we don't need these books. Why don't you get a real job and do something worthwhile that helps humanity instead of distributing books, you know, like this. And so the disciple comes back to the spiritual master and says, you know, what am I supposed to do? So he said, let me show you something. He takes him to the forest and he gives him a hammer, and then he has a big rock, and he tells him, you smash this rock with this hammer. So he hits the rock as hard as he can, and nothing happens, not even a scratch is on the rock. And he turns around to the spiritual master and says, how am I supposed to learn anything from this? He said, well, just keep hitting that rock and you come back, you know, and get some prasadam when you finish, when you've cracked that rock. And he said, come back and tell me how many times you hit it to crack it, you know? And so this guy counts, when he counts the 300th time, he sees a fine crack on the rock. So he runs back to the spiritual master and says, I cracked it, you know? And so the spiritual master says, how many times did it take you to crack the rock? He said, 300. He said, no, you're wrong. He says, 299. He said, no, you're wrong. 301. No, you're wrong. So he's thinking some approximation. He says, somewhere between 290 and 310. He says, no, you're wrong. He said, no, it definitely was there. He says, no, you're wrong. He says, so how many times? He said, actually, you cracked it the first time you hit it. And he said, how is that? He said, because when you hit the hammer hard on that rock, the crack started at the heart of the rock and traveled outside. And as you were hitting it, it was traveling towards the surface. And so the 300th time you hit it, it actually came out on the surface and you saw that it cracked the rock. So he said, actually, because we are speaking the Supreme Absolute Truth, every time you speak it, you're cracking the heart of that person. All it needs is more hammering, you know, it's just like more watering, whatever you want to call it. It's actually going to show up in the form of a result. So don't be discouraged, you know. Just speak the absolute truth. It works. Every time you speak it, it works. And I think that's where the Gaudiya Mat didn't repeat, And Prabhupada became, you know, said that, you know, it is because of you, us that we act, that the other crowd came up, because we're not preaching. We're not repeating these things.
Well, there's a, there's another issue in relation to this. Hmm. If you have a problem and I give you a solution for another problem, I'm speaking the truth. This has nothing to do with you. And I think that's a problem often. You're speaking the philosophy, but it doesn't relate to the problem that people have. Right. So, you know, you could say, well, I gave a great lecture. It was just, you know, parampara. It's just true. Just people were not relating to it.
Right.
So I think that's a big, it's a big, and we've all heard classes like that. We sit in the class and go, what does this have to do with anything? You know, and we've heard the class, wow, you were speaking to me. That really helped, you know. So that's important. And I think we can see that in the Christian world, they speak to people's problems. They use the Bible, speak to people's problems. They get mileage that way. So that may be part of the adaptation of philosophy. If it's in a vacuum that doesn't relate, then people just, they're not interested. But if it relates to something, then you'll see something lights up inside. And then they're open to hear. Like, for example, when I was thinking about how I could engage more non-devotees, then I thought, well, if I teach forgiveness, I can add in a whole section on karma. I can add in a section on chanting as a means of release, detachment, compassion, empathy, all these. And I thought, this is a good idea because the context is a problem. So they're going to listen to it. The philosophy, because it relates to solving the problem that they're interested in solving. So they're very open to it. So it's just, you know, contextually, how can you present it in a way that people will be open to hear it? One of my great pleasures I have is to preach to people when they don't realize they're being preached to. Like, they have no idea that that's what's going on. I just, like, the whole Bhagavad Gita, basically, but you thought I was, like, solving this problem of yours over here, and didn't. And I'm just looking at that going, wow, that's amazing. Because if I just came in straight philosophy, they would have been like, well, it's just your religion. You know, but now I applied it to their wound, and it's working, and it's healing it. So, you know, context and relevance. That's the expertise of a preacher. He's relevant. In fact, I spent like almost $3,000 on a training how to facilitate workshops. And I came home with like three gems. You know, the rest of the stuff I kind of, you know, was like, okay, I know this. Or it's kind of common sense. And one of the gems was, speak to the conditioning. What is the problem? What is the problem that people in your audience have? You speak to that, you win. And I adopted that. And it was like, target. You hit the bullseye when you do that. Because every word you speak is speaking to their problem, and they're listening. Because I have this problem. And it's a problem that they know they have, and it's a problem they want to solve. If you know they have a problem, they don't know it, then you have to convince them they have it. But if they know it, and you're addressing it, they're listening, and they want to apply it, the solution. So that's why, if you ever hear a class that bores you, that's probably why. It has no relevance to, you know, yeah, I heard that when I was bhakta, but what about, you know, now I'm dealing with this. Could you speak about that? And we had this sannyasi, he came from India years ago to Alachua. That was his first time in America. So he was giving a class as if we were all Indians in a village. You know, because that's his experience. That's all he knows. And everyone was just like staring at the walls, like, what does this have to do with anything? You know, we're American grihastas trying to, you know, pay our bills. We got kids, you know, we're trying to save them from becoming drug addicts, you know, and going off and getting pregnant. And he's talking about something that is just like, this has nothing to do with us. And he's a great scholar and a great preacher. It just wasn't relevant. So the greatness of his speaking wasn't appreciated. Yes, Narottam, you had something.
I was, and now that you've brought this up, thank you. I wanted to touch on that same point. Vishwambar Prabhu, I've been traveling and doing some programs with him, and one of the things that I really appreciate in his preaching is he'll always get to know people before he starts explaining the philosophy he asks all about. And I've seen it with my Guru Maharaj. I mean, you see it in Prabhupada's preaching. But, I mean, to actually have that in the forefront of our relationships. And well, I always see he asks people about what they understand, what their life's like, everything. And then when he speaks, it has so much relevance. Like, I give you one example. There was a lady who was dying, so we went to her home. She was like 95, and the whole family was there, a big Gujarati family. Maybe 20 people were there. And so we did a little bhajan, and the lady was like bedridden. She couldn't get out of bed, so she sat up and started clapping and singing with us. You know? But at the what ended up finally happening was her grandson came and started asking about his grandmother dying. So Vishwambar Prabhu, he spoke to the grandson, and it moved all of us so much. It was just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that point, relevance. Yeah. I see everybody has got to go. I'm sorry if I'm talking.
Our goal is to help people. Compassion, understanding, connection. Not, our goal is not to espouse philosophy from a textbook. That's not the object. The object is to connect people. And so if we're in that consciousness that I'm just trying to bring this person closer to Krishna, the right things will come out, and the wrong things will not come out. But one last thing, it was a nice thing relevant to this is that I was studying a man who was doing corporate work, you know, as a trainer. And he said, before he would go, he would say, can I talk to some of the people? So he talked to them and say, what's the problem here? What's going on in your company? Who's, you know, what's problems with relationships? Who's, what's the culture, this and that? So when he came in, he was addressing the exact problems that they were dealing with. He wasn't shooting in the dark. That's perfect, isn't it? Like, so when you're speaking to an audience, we need to know, like, what are you going through? Sometimes, a brahmachari can't understand what a grihastha is going through. He can't relate. Once in L.A., there was a verse about marriage and progeny and this and that, and they asked a brahmachari to give the class. And he looked at the verse and he said, I'm sorry, I can't. You picked the wrong person to give class. And he spoke on a totally, he said, I can speak on another topic because I don't have any, you know. So it's like, why did they pick him to give a class on you? You know, or there's a verse on, you know, women this, women that. Pick a woman, let her talk about it. You know, she knows. Let her speak. Okay, we'll stop here. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that.
Relevance and resonating, I would add, resonating.
Yeah,
I think maybe sometimes we're more concerned with espousing Siddhanta. But there's a letter like that, where Prabhupada said, yeah, you have to speak the truth and you don't want to compromise. But if you're by your speaking, everyone goes away and you say, but I just spoke the truth. And he said, no, you failed. You know, it's like, well, I told you exactly what the product's about, just the way, you know, my boss told me, and you didn't buy it, so something's wrong with you. You know, like that. Okay. Thank you all for watching. Hare Krishna. I think tomorrow Vijay will give class. At least. Okay. Hare Krishna.